Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Adam Sterling with you once again on CFAX 1070. I'd like to welcome to our studio a very special guest, Victoria Councillor Ben Isett, agreeing to come in and chat with us after some unfortunate events this week. Councillor, thank you for your time this morning. How are you?
Good morning, Adam. I'm doing well.
All right. Last time you were going to come on CFAX 1070 with Al Farabee. Unfortunately, you had to cancel the interview at the last moment because Al wanted to ask you a question about a YouTube video that was published by Victoria Police Chief Del Manick the day before. Why did you need to cancel that interview at the last moment?
I hadn't viewed the video and I wanted to see the Chief's comments in order to provide, I guess, informed commentary.
Okay.
Rather than uninformed commentary. I mentioned to Al that I wasn't in a position to discuss that, but I was happy to discuss the subject matter of the interview that had been scheduled, and he said that wasn't possible.
That's not what he told me, but we can. I'll make attempts to verify that.
Sure.
All right. Have you viewed the video at this point in time?
I haven't.
You have
but
not.
But I've seen reports of it.
You have not. Okay, I'm going to play a clip from it.
And tell Sounds you good. That there was active resistance, obstruction, in getting in the way of police doing their job. Our officers were pushed, they were kicked, and they were subject to race-based verbal attacks. I'm quite proud of the officers maintaining a very high level of professionalism and restraint in carrying out duties in very difficult circumstances.
You were there as an observer, Ben. You went to get knowledge of the situation. Did you observe anything that aligns with those claims?
The first component relating to people blocking, yes. And I should say I spent 2 hours having a very cordial conversation with the chief yesterday. We met for coffee.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
We were going to sit down for an hour, and it ended up taking 2 hours. We spent more than an hour on that specific incident. I had a list of notes from some of the legal observers who were there, and the chief had done his own debriefing. I didn't witness any kicking, spitting, anything along those lines. I did seek clarification with respect to the allegation of racism, and the chief, it would be best for him to speak for himself, but what I heard him say in clarifying to me is that was people saying, you're white, you don't know what it means to be an Indigenous person, and so it was, I guess there's a term around reverse racism, but some people who study racism, I'm not going to comment further on that one, but
you're not compelled to answer any.
No, but that's how the chief clarified it to me, that it was officers of European ethnicity who were indicating that they felt discriminated against by people saying they didn't understand policing Indigenous issues because of their ethnicity.
All right. Yeah. This is what you told Ryan Price as to why you were there in the first place.
I got a message late last night indicating that arrests were anticipated. And so I did go down to 1810 Blanchard.
Who sent you the message?
About half dozen people.
Half dozen people sent you that message?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, several messages.
Yeah.
I'll respect people's anonymity, but I can show you a couple Facebook messages right here in my phone.
Okay.
They said, Ben, we're worried things are heating up. The police are getting more aggressive. They said they'd like someone down there to negotiate. That's not my role, but I chose to go down there as an observer. I was there from, I had been there earlier briefly to have a look between 7 and 8 p.m., and then I ended up being there from midnight until 6:30 in the morning.
That's a large number of people all reaching out to you simultaneously. Do you share messages with them more than once? Like, how do they know
Let me see. So I'll just take one example, and I'm going to have a peek. Let's see. This individual...
So sometimes. So that wasn't the first time they had messaged you. You've corresponded.
No, this gentleman, this was the first time.
The first time ever they reached out to you.
I had had personal conversations, but the first time I'd ever received a Facebook message from this individual.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you share information back and forth with the protesters from time to time. Is that fair? No?
Well, a lot of them are my friends.
Okay.
I've been working at this for years. I've never hidden my background. That's why people know what I'm about, and more than 14,000 of them asked me to serve them on city council.
I know. You're the most influential guy in this city. In terms of municipal politics,
I'm just one voice. I'm just one voice of nine.
Well, you are just one voice of nine in terms of votes, but I think we both know that other councillors look to you for guidance.
Yeah. So if you looked at my slogan in the last two elections, what my promise to voters, it was that I was going to stand up for people and the planet. It was photos of me at demonstrations. It was me standing up with grassroots social movements, pushing for social change. That's been my record in public life. And that's the option I put in front of electors. And they've chosen me to represent them, with more than 14,000 of them asking me to be there. Like, all right. Adam, all right. Where's your mandate from? Some guy who had enough dough to buy a radio station?
All right.
Just ask you. Answer the question.
You can criticize the question. Is it the role of an elected politician to question the legitimacy of media in a free and democratic society, Ben Isett? I have constitutionally protected rights under Section 2 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, freedom of the press and other media of communication. Do you really feel it's appropriate for you to try to undermine that legitimacy at this time?
I'm not trying to undermine the legitimacy. I'm trying to
justify my job of doing this. You are trying to undermine my legitimacy.
I'm standing
That's
up.
That's exactly what you're doing.
I'm standing up to a narrow corporate agenda that's pushing fossil fuel interests, misrepresenting protests, misrepresenting me, and to be frank, exposing me to personal risk of harm. And I had a video clip. You love playing video or audio clips.
Yeah, I've got one. I've got a lot more.
Me too. So I'm going to play so my...
Hold on. I said we'd get a chance to do that. Yeah, we will.
Well, you've already played one of yours.
We're not doing one in one, Ben.
Well, then maybe we should just end this interview.
All right. You're free to go.
Well, yeah.
You're not being held here.
I said a condition for me being on here was I wanted to play a threatening
and,
message
and
I got.
Will.
So
and
your listeners
will.
Hear what you're
and
what you're
will.
Creating by stirring this
and
stuff up.
We will.
Why don't we just do it now so people know what I'm dealing with because of you the hate you're generating to
you know,
me 4 hours a day every day, Adam.
You know what? All right, we will. I'll give you that.
Perfect.
Play it. So
thank you.
Ben has brought his phone in and he says he's going to play an excerpt of a phone message that someone left him.
And there's some expletives. So as discussed with Adam before we went on air, it's just an excerpt because those expletives...
If you had informed us of this sooner than 10 minutes ago, we would have been able to take care of those expletives and have the phone call played in its entirety, counselor.
Well, I can get you a copy once we're off the air here. So
it doesn't help us now, though, but you can hold it up to the microphone if you like.
Sorry, I'm just going to... And it's disturbing, but this is what I'm dealing with, and this is what a member of the public, who knows if he was a CFAX listener, I have no idea, but this is a message I got yesterday when I got out of a council meeting.
Be dousing gasoline, it'll get on fire, but you're targeted going forward, Mr. Isett, okay? You're going to find your life turned upside down, just like you're turning other people's upside down.
I think you should report that to the police, Ben. Have you?
I did have a conversation with I brought it up in my conversation with the chief, yes.
Have you made a police complaint? Because that sounds like a threat to me.
My understanding is the law of Canada sits on the edge of a pin, and
so no, you haven't.
No,
filed a
no. To be honest, no. I have, and
okay,
and the officer
good.
I spoke with
good.
the where the edge is. If he had said he was going to douse me in gasoline and light me on fire, that would be a threat that would be chargeable because he said I should be doused in gasoline and lit on fire. It falls just short of the threshold. And I think the officer, I completely think he diligently pursued that, and I have no questioning of his handling of
I that. Want everybody to listen to me right now. Do not threaten Ben Isett, ever. If I find out about it, you have to deal with me. Are we clear? Good.
Thank you, Adam. I appreciate that.
All
happy
right.
to go back to the subject
All
matter
right.
we're here for.
All right. Now, you have said it's important for public leaders to stand with protesters.
It's important to have leaders in the community stand with them. So specifically last night and in the wee hours of this morning, I was there to ensure everyone's rights were respected.
And you were there to ensure everyone's rights were respected. You also said this.
Whenever there's a policing operation involving protests, there's always a high risk that the police will use violence. And that individuals may have their rights impacted.
Lawyer Michael Mulligan says you were unfair.
And I thought that was really quite unfair. I mean, I got to say, in my daily work that I've done for some time, I do criminal defense work. I spend my time reading police reports, cross-examining police officers. I represent people who are charged with criminal offenses. That's
Indeed.
What I do for a living.
Indeed.
And it's, in my experience, not fair to say to the police that there's a high risk that the police are going to use violence when... dealing with these matters. That
Why are you saying things that are unfair, Ben?
I would not say that's unfair. I'll
no.
explain what I was saying. Basically, violence is the affliction of the use of force was the definition I was using. I think the police are the only group in society, along with the members of the armed forces, who have the right to use violence. So at times it's lawful force. Uh-huh. So my comments there is that at these protest situations, we do see the use of force and violence. And sometimes, like, I think any officer, they don't enjoy using violence. But if they, at times, to intervene and to do their job, they are allowed to do things that any of us would be thrown in jail for doing.
Yes,
like
they are.
Grabbing someone, throwing someone on the ground, doing what would be assault if it was unlawful. But because they're doing it in the execution of their duties, it's a lawful use of force. So that was what I was saying.
All right. Because so you say it was lawful force.
Now, that is for the Office of the Police Complaints Commissioner to determine.
All right.
My own personal...
Are you sure that it's... Because you said this.
I think police used excessive force.
Yeah, and honest. I was just going to...
Excessive force defined under the criminal code, very serious allegation. What conduct specifically met that threshold for you?
Happy to discuss that. So overall, there was maybe 40 officers on site. Based on their insignia, it appeared that they were Victoria Police and Saanich Police. The majority, I think, exercised restraint. And I think when you are an employee, a public servant who has the right to use force against citizens, I think the exercise of restraint is essential. I personally witnessed a handful of officers who I believe did not exercise restraint. And that's where my comment around excessive use of force came from. But I think the majority of officers that I witnessed that day did exercise restraint in a very challenging context.
Did you witness excessive force under the definition of the criminal code exhibited by any officer that day?
I think I saw force used that was disproportionate to what was required for them to remove the youth from the...
So that's no. Like, I'm asking it, like, it's a simple question. Like, are you, like, do you have information? Do you have knowledge?
What I saw, the type of force I saw used, essentially there was 12 indigenous youth and one elder in the Ministry of Petroleum. Mm-hmm. They went, I guess you'd call it going limp. They did not sort of voluntarily walk out of the building. And in an operation that took about 5 hours, they were carried out one by one. Mm-hmm. As the police were leaving the building, especially for maybe the first half dozen or so youth that were removed, there was a major confrontation between the officers and some members of the public. And in my opinion, the treatment of some of those members of the public by officers was excessive and did include excessive force. But the commissioner, the police complaints commissioner, will make the final determination.
All right. I want to play a couple of clips for you. BC NDP government, you on good terms with them?
That party has generally been my political home for most of my adult life. I have some disagreements in terms of policy, particularly as it relates to environmental policy. Mm-hmm. This LNG project and the Coastal GasLink pipeline and its intrusion on the territory of the Wet'suwet'en people is a major disagreement I have with the government. Also, the liquidation of the last old-growth rainforests on Vancouver Island is a major concern for me, and I am disappointed by the lack of action by the province on that issue, that they're continuing the course pursued by the previous government. I've always had cordial and friendly interactions with the premier, including sharing meals. It was at the Association of Vancouver Island and Coastal Communities conference a few years ago, before he was premier. Perhaps a year before he became premier.
Right.
We had a conversation in the Pride Parade talked about how his government was doing, talked about some issues around housing policy. And I guess it appears that this controversy we're in the middle of right now over the colonization of Wet'suwet'en land is and the inspiring activism shown by Indigenous youth and their supporters who engaged in the largest act of nonviolent civil disobedience in the history of this community on Tuesday. It appears that it's getting to the premier. He appears to be under stress. I empathize with him. He's formed the opinions he has, but I don't harbor any ill will towards the premier.
Well, that's good to hear, because I think the BC NDP government has been pretty hard on your council. Like, here's Premier John Horgan joking about the Sir Johnny McDonald statue issue.
I haven't had any conversations with the mayor about Sir Johnny McDonald, and if I see her coming, I may well run the other way.
Here's Mike Farnworth talking about the necessary intervention of the BC government in terms of inadequate levels of policing in Victoria.
Sometimes the kids can't play in the sandbox, and Dad has to come in and say, this is how it's going
to
be.
How's it feel to get called a kid playing in the sandbox? Does it make you mad?
No, not mad.
No? Does it hurt?
No. Okay. It's disappointing. Yeah. I think Canada has 13 capital cities, if you count the territories. I believe there's only two in the country, Charlottetown and Victoria, where the provincial government does not provide a grant in lieu of taxes for the Legislative Assembly. So if we look at the amount of policing costs that are being imposed on the taxpayers of Victoria and Esquimalt because of the provincial capital being here, we look at all the policing resources arising from the 80 demonstrations that the chief and I discussed yesterday.
I know. There's so many demonstrations.
We don't get a dollar from the provincial government for housing the capital here. So I think it's unfortunate that the province has chosen to impose all of the costs for policing the capital city on the taxpayers of Victoria and Esquimalt, who have the lowest median incomes of any residents in the region. So the province, I think, has to show leadership, move forward with an amalgamated police force for the capital region, and bring some equity into the funding of policing services. So rather than offhand remarks from the Solicitor General, I think what our community and our region really needs is leadership on amalgamation of policing services.
All right, because he said it again a year later.
Perhaps if less time was spent talking or dealing with the 50% pay increase and more time was spent dealing on some of these issues around policing, they might find a way. We wouldn't have to be coming to my ministry to resolve these disputes all the time.
What do you think? Is that a fair comment?
Not at all.
No?
This is
Why?
An individual who's making $160,000 a year. It's punching down.
Yeah.
I love the job I have.
Do you?
I'm able to have additional income.
You don't seem like you love it lately.
I teach at the university. I do research work, consulting. But some of my colleagues aren't so fortunate. And the fact is $42,000 to be the leader of the community with all the development projects, all the expectations of the public for engagement.
Uh-huh.
I think it was naive of me to think that asking a question in a budget survey would be a way to gauge public input. It got spun out of control. And I guess the way most municipalities do that, you'd hire a consultant, you'd hide behind the consultant to avoid being accountable for the decision. So we asked the public.
Yeah, we asked all of your colleagues who you were talking about, because you told one of our reporters that the raise wasn't for you, right? And you stand by that. The raise was not for you in terms of what you need. It was one of your colleagues. So we asked
them.
It's
not for any individual colleague. It's for, I believe my income is likely higher than some of my colleagues. It's not for me to begin to dissect people's personal finances, I think, is distasteful, Adam. But
okay,
if you want to go that way, let's go it.
All right, let's do it. We asked all of your colleagues on council who you were talking about when you said it wasn't for you. We got responses from all but two, Sarah Potts and Sharmarki Dubo.
Okay.
To this day, they still have not actually weighed in, although Sarah Potts around the council table has made comments about, well, everybody knows how much money we make during the recent paid taxpayer-funded $10,000, well, it's closer to 12 to 15 now, depending on how the budget is going, lunch issue. I haven't heard Sharmarki Dubo weigh in on our person, although I want to commend him because he said that he was willing to have the cost of those lunches come out of his pay if necessary. My question to you is that why would anybody sign up to run for a job if the pay is too low?
Because they want to make their community better and stand up to vested interests that are destroying the planet, that are creating more inequality, and to take some steps to build a more inclusive and more sustainable city and region. And that's why I'm doing the job. You'd have to ask my colleagues why they stood for office.
All right. Do you think that they knew before they ran for office it was possible council could vote themselves a raise?
It's always possible. Saanich did it since the last election.
You're right, they did. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's always possible.
Do you think that expectation was there?
No. I don't. You'd have
you
to check
know?
With them. You never know how. I personally, I moved a motion proposing that we would ask the public what they thought about an increase. So, I personally think it's been 10 years since we reviewed our council remuneration bylaw.
Yep.
City operations are only getting more complex.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually proposed in the last term, and I think several council members were sort of shy or not wanting to be attacked in the public eye. And so they backed down on having a review that was already long overdue. And it's still long overdue. But that's where we're at.
All right. let's see, we've played the NDP government issues. Mary Griffin, this was broadcast across the country the other day.
Yesterday, Victoria City Councillor Ben Isaac was here expressing his unwavering support for the protesters, and at one point was inquiring of the access points for the LG, right?
Is that true, Ben? Were you inquiring as to the access points of the Lieutenant Governor of British Columbia?
I was walking around the grounds, yep. Curious about where the LG would enter. Okay. I was not inquiring.
No.
I did inquire.
False. So are you asking for a clarification or a correction from Czech News on that matter?
I would like a clarification on her source of information. What I did do is I asked another reporter if the LG had arrived. I personally, and I talked with Chief Manick about this yesterday. Yeah. I have always been passionate, about standing up, for what I believe in the community.
Yeah.
And for me, I at times support nonviolent civil disobedience.
Yes, you do.
And this goes back throughout history. If you look at, there's a number, the founder of John Horgan's party was jailed for seditious conspiracy.
What would you have done if somebody had told you? Would you have shared that information
with
protesters?
Yes, what I talked about with Del Manick, mm-hmm. I may have sat in front of the car if I was inclined. I feel very passionately about this Wet'suwet'en issue.
Okay.
I don't know if I had. I hadn't made a conscious decision, but I was curious. And what I've talked to the chief about.
So you might have blocked the road.
The driveway.
Okay,
but what I've talked to Del Manick about, and the protocol we've agreed to, is we've just accepted, like, it seems strange to people who maybe don't ascribe to progressive values. But the fact is, someone with a track record of standing up for what they believe in, participating in demonstrations from time to time, that's who the voters of Victoria have elected to represent them in city council. That's the reality we're in.
Okay.
And so what I've told the chief is no surprises.
Okay.
If I do feel inclined, if I feel passionate about my beliefs and I'm inclined to stand up for those beliefs, I'm going to give his officers a heads up, and it would be orderly. Jane Fawn gets arrested every Friday standing up for the environment.
You can be expected to block a road if necessary.
I don't think so.
No?
But
the driveway.
I am saying, you were asking what I would have done.
Yeah, and you said I might have sat down in front of the car.
I think it's a long shot, to be honest, but it's one, yes. So, I was curious.
Because you've made allegations that the Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce defamed you by saying that you and other councillors took part in protests.
They said we blocked traffic on the bridge.
Yeah, they did.
False claims of interference with traffic operations and causing anxiety in residents' lives communicated to all recipients of the Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce's digital newsletter has a clear defamatory and harmful effect on my reputation.
Does it really?
Yes.
So it lowers the estimation of a right-thinking person of your reputation, given that you just volunteered that you might sit down in front of the car.
In a driveway.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, they were saying the bridge protests. Okay. If you read that.
Okay. No, I did. So defamation is a detestation or vilification is among the emotions that it creates. So, Ben, I said, why are people who block traffic villains?
They're not.
They're not?
No.
No? So they're not. So we shouldn't think poorly of people who block traffic?
I don't, but I think the way that newsletter was drafted was intended to create that impression.
Okay. Can you stay? I've got a break and I've got a newscast, and I have more questions that I want to ask you.
Sounds good.
Okay, perfect. Let's do it. All right, quick break. News is next. Stay with us.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Ben Isaac continuing his conversation with us. Ben Isaac, this is another clip from your conversation with Ryan Price about the protest that you attended as an observer on Blanchard Street.
And I think the police would confirm that in terms of standing back from where the enforcement was occurring.
You were standing back from where the enforcement was occurring as an observer. Did you at any point attempt to gain entry to that building?
No.
No.
Because
I've had people say, you know, Ben was a lot closer than he's saying. So is that true or is that not true?
So I got down there at midnight, as we discussed. Within 5 minutes of getting down there, there was an Indigenous woman leading a chant, and people were sort of chanting, and I took part in the chant, and I hadn't yet seen the youth who were doing the sit-in, and it was sort of like opaque glass, and they were kind of through these double doors, and I wanted to see inside. And so as I was chanting, I went up to the window to look inside, and I guess it was about 10 or 15 minutes before the police had established a line, basically several meters away from the doors of the building. And I guess the police perceived that me going up to the glass was threatening. That was not my intention. I discussed this with the chief yesterday, and I think it was a misunderstanding. And I think any officer you would speak to, and what the police chief confirmed in my conversation with him, was that throughout the operation, as the 40 officers were removing the youth from the building, I was standing a good 10 to 20 feet back observing for the next kind of 5 hours. And if you had the chief on the air, I completely believe he would have a consistent message.
All right. I want to ask you about your tweets that you sent out the other day in response to Vic PD's tweet, February the 11th. As you know, they tweeted, 6:36 p.m. update. We're investigating reports of staff and others being assaulted and injured during today's protest at the BC legislature. They then ask, please call. You respond to this tweet by saying, I was there all day observing interactions between the public and legislative officials. This allegation is hogwash designed to discredit Indigenous youth and their supporters. Vic PD's mandate is to ensure public safety, not spread fake news. This is Chief of Staff of the Speaker of the Legislative Assembly, Alan Mullen.
I mean, I know there's been, you know, reports that certain people said, oh, it's hogwash. There was no sort of violence. Well, we've got a lot of entrances, all of which were being occupied. So unless you were at certain entrances, you wouldn't have seen that. Well, I saw it, and I spoke to staff who were the subject of that.
He saw it, and he spoke to staff who were the subject of it. Would you like to take this opportunity to modify those remarks?
No.
No.
Would he?
It's still hogwash. You don't believe him?
It's hogwash to describe a protest that was overwhelmingly peaceful. The largest act of nonviolent civil disobedience in the history of Greater Victoria, when more than 1,000 Indigenous youth and their supporters stood up for their values. They were generally, it was a thousand.
I'm going to read you the tweet again.
I
don't think you heard it, Ben. I'm going to read you the tweet again.
Just a second.
You're trying to meander off.
No, I'll come back. It was 1,000 happy warriors with a few bad apples.
Okay,
and I think
thank
to
you.
Spin it.
Thank you.
But when you went to spin it as a violent protest, they're not saying everybody was a bad apple, Ben. But when you looked that within
they're
minutes,
they're saying we're investigating reports of staff and others being assaulted and
so
injured during
today's
protest in the legislature. They don't say everybody was bad. They say there are reports of staff being assaulted.
So what my tweet was intended to do was nip in the bud the spin doctoring that you guys and all the other corporate media organizations were going to do of a violent protest. And Vic PD, I think, may have been caught in the crossfire, but since it was their tweet, both of my tweets were to Vic PD.
Okay, so
if you look at
media,
them,
and you're saying that because...
The Vic PD is caught in the crossfire of responding to the inevitable spin and misrepresentation of those amazing young people, and they're standing up again today. There's a 24 sites around the community with several thousand happy warriors who are standing up for what they believe in, trying to make some change in our community, standing up to the colonization of Wet'suwet'en territory, standing up for some climate leadership. And we're talking about these are distractions.
Distractions. Assault is a distraction.
No, the instances of assault. The instances of assault should be fully investigated.
You called them fake news. Now you say they should be fully investigated. That sounds like a change of position to me, Ben.
The spin of a violent protest.
It doesn't say it was a violent protest. It says we're investigating reports of staff and others being assaulted at the BC legislature. Alan Mullen also had, this to say. He says it's not even limited to four.
Victoria Police Department have announced that four separate complaints have been made. Those complaints are saying I was assaulted. I am aware that there were some more sort of assaults that have yet to be reported to Victoria Police, if at all. Obviously, our Sergeant at Arms group, our Legislative Protective Services group, investigate these as well, and the staff and public can bring their voices to that group.
So it's not even limited to four, Ben. There's more coming, according to that. And you said it was hogwash. You said it was fake news. You were wrong. What are you going to do about it?
So I arrived at the legislature at 9 a.m.
Uh-huh.
I'd heard there was a demonstration called by
Indigenous
youth.
Are you explaining why you were
youth.
Wrong?
Nope. Okay. I'm answering your question.
Okay.
And I had no idea that people were going to be blocking the building. If I had known, I would have been curious and I would have been down there whenever they started. But I walked from home. I got there at 9 a.m., saw the whole place blocked. And for the next 9 hours, I walked around that building, and I walked about 16 kilometers observing those entrances. Now, some people said, Ben, how could you see all the entrances at once?
Yeah, I said that. I said that.
So there was a team of more than 20 legal observers.
And you were coordinating with them?
Nope.
No,
nope. But they issued a statement. I had never even met these people until after.
What time was that statement issued?
They issued a statement yesterday, last night.
So you tweeted the day before the statement, knowing what would be in the statement.
I had spoken with them.
You were coordinating with them.
I was not coordinating over the course of walking 16 kilometers. Yep. I had many conversations,
okay.
And I'm just going to read out a statement
that happened the day after you made your tweet.
So
that violates temporal causality.
Okay, so this is
I'm talking about a February 11th tweet.
You're quoting the speaker's evidence. So February 13th, 2020, and this is from a group called Legal Observers Victoria.
Okay.
It's a group of lawyers and law students.
Yep.
February 13th, 2020.
Yep.
On February 11th,
2 days after your tweet.
Just let me read my clip.
Yep.
On February 11th, 2020, entrances to the BC legislature were blockaded by supporters of Indigenous youth occupying the BC legislature steps in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en hereditary leadership. A group of legal observers were present at the BC legislature from 12 p.m. on February 6th, 2020, to 1 a.m. on February 12th, 2020. During the blockade on February 11th, 2020, they documented their observations in 21 notebooks and 62 videos. 24 legal observers were present to witness the blockade on February 11th, 2020.
And you notes, didn't have access
just,
to
I'm
any
almost
of that.
Done.
Okay.
Notes, videos, and personal recollections of legal observers show that the Indigenous youth and their representatives communicated regularly to supporters to stay peaceful, abide by police requests, and refrain from engaging in violence. Notes, videos, and personal recollections of legal observers do not corroborate claims that supporters committed assault. Inquiries can be directed to legalobserversvic@gmail.com.
All right.
I'm not a part of that
collective. So that was written 2 days after you did this tweet.
This group of legal observers,
I know,
two dozen
said
of them,
that. Yeah.
They had to do their due diligence.
They don't see it either.
They had to do their due diligence, mm-hmm. consult their notes, consult the videos to provide an informed and accurate statement to the public rather than some rash statement.
Rash statement. So the Speaker of the Legislative Assembly's Chief of Staff has made a rash statement. According
when
to
was that one issued?
That one was issued yesterday.
No, they both took 2 days. Both of those entities took 2 days to do their due diligence.
All right. In terms of inquiring into the LG's location, there are people out there
yes.
who are concerned that you would share that with the protesters. Would you have?
You said you might
sit down in front of the car. Are you going to sit down by yourself, or would you get other people to help you?
I haven't sat in front of a car in 20 years.
Then why did you say it, Ben? Why did you suppose that you would? You volunteered that.
I study political protest.
Mm-hmm.
I finished a dissertation recently
yep.
called The Patterns of Protest, Property, Social Movements, and the Law. The last time I sat in front of a car was when my wife at the time, she's still a very good friend of mine,
mm-hmm.
she was being removed from the headquarters of Island Health for protesting Gordon Campbell's decimation of the health system, the
yeah.
privatization of health and education and the cuts and all that. And this was back in 2002 at the Jubilee Hospital.
Yes, it was. It was January of 2002 at the Royal Jubilee Hospital.
There was five people who occupied the building. One was a former board member of Island Health.
Mm-hmm.
One was my ex-wife and good
mm-hmm.
friend. And as she was being hauled away in the paddy wagon,
mm-hmm.
I just felt inspired. And I chose to sit in front of that paddy wagon, and an officer or two officers lifted me by the elbows. They moved me to the side of the driveway, and they took my wife to the headquarters. I wasn't actually arrested,
okay.
and I went down to the headquarters and waited till she was released.
You had your picture in the newspaper the next day. It's on page D1.
Yes, you have a good
yeah,
memory.
I do.
Yeah. It's so.
You
anyways,
look so young. You see, you're not named in the caption, Ben. It's really hard to find something like that. You're just called a young protester.
Yep. No, that was shortly after I'd been runner-up for mayor when I was 24. So
yeah.
We have a long history here.
And so you've been detained by police. You know what it feels like to have them pick you up and carry you away. You know what it feels like to watch the woman that would become your wife brought away in the paddy wagon. You don't think that colors your judgment at all in the police budget?
If you look at the legislation, we're
mm-hmm.
we're allowed to have opinions.
Oh, absolutely.
We don't have to have an empty mind.
I know you don't.
So it. But how often
do you talk about that incident involving the woman who would become your wife in the paddy wagon when you sat down on the road and how that might color your views of Vic PD?
I did it because I was fighting against Gordon Campbell.
I know, and they stopped you from that fight. Vic PD stopped you that day, Ben.
Yes.
And you don't harbor any animosity against them over that?
No.
None?
It was...
No?
It, I think the officers who were there would say it was dignified. Mm-hmm. It was every Friday, Jane Fonda's being arrested. She's not grabbing at cops. She's doing it in an honorable tradition of nonviolent civil disobedience. Mm-hmm. And that was, I was sitting on the road.
Yep.
I did not resist arrest. Yep. The reason they didn't arrest or charge me was because it would probably fell below the threshold of what they thought merited that.
So, do you think most people out there, when you're talking about presiding over the police budget, know that happened? Do you think they deserve to know that happened? Because I hardly ever hear it brought up. And I'm glad you brought it up today.
They might. What I offer them in the elections is that I'm going to stand up for people in the planet. When Gordon Campbell and his BC Liberal government was attacking people, attacking social rights, dismantling the social safety net.
The January 29th paper, I believe, by the way, dismantling
the social safety net to engage in that kind of nonviolent civil disobedience paled in that was in the noblest traditions. That's how societies change.
Yeah.
That's how we eventually got rid of Gordon Campbell.
Here's what I think, though, Ben. I think that colored your judgment. I think you don't like the Victoria Police Department because of what happened that day. You do. You like them.
The individual officers, I respect them.
If that happened to me, I'd remember it. I'd remember the day I tried to stop my wife getting taken away by the police. I'd remember
sitting that was
in the
about
road.
Me.
And if
and
I
Gordon...
ever had control over that budget, Ben, I think it would influence me. Yeah, I think what? Maybe the police have too much power, too much force, too much money, and I try to take it away. Is that what you did?
No, that wasn't about me and police. No? That was about me and Gordon Campbell.
Okay.
And me and our healthcare system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that the only time you've ever been detained by police? No, it's not.
Well, there was 3 years earlier when the projectionists were on strike at the movie theater.
Yep.
I was maybe about, well, it was 1999. I was 21.
Yep.
And every Tuesday, on Hot Ticket Tuesday, myself and about 100 community members would go to both the Odeon and the Capitol 6 and essentially walk a picket line. And we had some slogans saying, wage cuts aren't right, no movie tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We had another one saying, make it a no show, rent a video, make it a no show, rent a video. And we would encourage patrons of those theaters to stay home and to support the projectionists who were being de-skilled and were being pushed out of their jobs. And And some officers, some VicP officers, came up to me, and they were trying to defend the interests of Cineplex and Famous Players, as can occur in labor disputes. Mm-hmm. And they grabbed me, and they were attempting to pull me into a police car.
Yeah.
And this old Scottish retired engineer, who his career had been with mining companies in Chile, but when he moved to Victoria in his retirement, he was one of the most principled citizens I remember, Angus Morton. Mm-hmm. He was in a three-piece suit with his Scottish lilt, and he grabbed me by the arm, and I guess he did what you would call unarresting someone, and he said, if you're taking him, you're taking me. And then the officers decided to let it go, and that us walking on the sidewalk supporting the projectionists.
So that's two incidents.
Yes.
What about Bear Mountain? What happened at Bear Mountain?
So at Bear Mountain, they were the province at the time issued permits to use provincial capital commission land in a green belt to build the Bear Mountain interchange. There was opposition from the Lekwungen speaking peoples and the Wasanich peoples. There was desecration of indigenous cultural heritage sites, a cave that was blown up.
The Karst Limestone
Formation cave. Yeah, and that were had spiritual significance.
Yep.
I won't speak to the spiritual significance because my understanding that's a taboo in Coast Salish tradition.
Okay.
But about a dozen cultural heritage sites were being threatened or had been desecrated. And it got to the point where Lekwungen-speaking peoples
called for support. So you went up there and did what you needed to do, yes?
No. So what happened
what
that
happened?
Day is I was at work.
That day, so there was a day.
I had been commissioned to do a report for an environmental organization looking at the history of land development and environmental despoliation in Langford, basically, since the municipality had been founded.
Yep.
And what I saw was a very checkered story of there was forest reserve land that was supposed to remain working forest, and in some very strange transactions over Christmas of 2001.
So you're justifying
just
what happened.
Just after Gordon Campbell, Gordon Campbell became premier, one of his ministers, Stan Hagen, in a flurry of emails, managed to get a very large piece of land released from the Forest Land Reserve, and somehow it ended up in the hands of Len Berry and became the Bear Mountain Development, contributing to urban sprawl.
So get detained by police?
So no. What happened was...
What happened?
What happened was when the RCMP went in with 100 officers to remove the tree sit from the forest on the Crown land in the Green Belt. I was at work.
Yeah.
So I wasn't there when they did that operation and began or did the logging operations. There was a rally on the weekend, and in the clear cut, I went into the clear cut.
Yeah.
And a few days later, the officers, they came to my house and they actually told my wife that we want to talk to Ben.
Is that the same one that got taken away in the paddy wagon when you sat down on the
road?
Yes,
it was.
Okay.
And I've only had been married once, and she's a good friend, but we're not still together.
Okay.
But basically, they said we want to talk to Ben. So what it was is I went down to the Victoria Police Headquarters.
Yeah.
This was RCMP jurisdiction.
That sounds very unpleasant.
No, it was fine. I had a friend outside just to make sure it all went well.
Well, you brought a friend to make sure it all went well, even though it was fine. That sounds like you were afraid. I'd be afraid if that happened.
Just my due diligence, just some company. So he waited in front of the building.
Yeah.
I went into an interview room off the main foyer of the in the police Victoria Police Headquarters, and there was one officer from West Shore RCMP.
Yeah.
We had about a 15-minute meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I signed a promise to appear at the provincial courthouse in Langford.
Yes.
The day of that hearing, it was about 6 months later, I went out to Langford, and I was advised that, Colwood, and I was advised that the hearing was not taking place because the Crown wasn't pursuing the charges.
So none of this has colored your view of police. You're not trying to defund the police force because of this.
No, I'm trying.
I'm not
trying to defund the police
force. I find it hard to believe. You might not be aware of how much it's coloring your judgment.
So Vic PD.
How many other instances are there? Is it just the three?
Vic PD. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Vic PD is the most heavily resourced department in the country.
I know.
It's got the most funding per capita of any police force in the country. It has the most officers per capita of any police force in the country. And what I hear, not just...
Actually, Montreal has more, I think, don't they?
I've never heard that. I've never seen data to support that. What I hear from residents from across the political spectrum is they think that there has to be some fiscal restraint in policing expenditures.
All right.
And I would point out that until those comments that you replayed with respect to the Jack Davis building and what I observed in terms of some excessive force from a handful of officers, I had not commented once on police operations. And I challenge you to find something where from when I got elected as an elected official until 2 weeks ago, my entire focus was on trying to introduce some fiscal restraint into policing and completely respecting the authority of the chief with respect to police operations. And it's only when I began to develop concerns of some aspects of policing operations relating to Indigenous people and feeling that policing wasn't adequately informed by a decolonization lens and the historic overrepresentation of Aboriginal people in Canada's criminal justice system.
All right. That I chose to speak out. All right, we're almost out of time. Ben, you said that you might have sat down in front of the car of the LG. I don't think you would have done that alone. I think if you knew where the LG was going to come, you would have told your friends on Facebook. Do you want to deny that one last time?
Yes. I wasn't even communicating with anyone on Facebook
With anyone. What about other communications devices? Not Facebook. Text? Anything?
I was walking around that building.
Why did you ask, Ben? Why did you need to know where the LG was coming in? Look at your history. Look at how this looks.
Curiosity.
Curiosity.
As someone who studies the
Just admitted this hour that you might have sat down in front of the car. You asked about the location of the Lieutenant Governor, and you expect us to believe that it was only curiosity.
I was curious.
I don't think the Premier believes that. I think that's why he said what he said about you the other day, that his thoughts are not printable.
My thoughts on that individual are not printable.
I think he harbors similar suspicions. Ben, what do you think?
I think we're in a climate crisis.
Yeah, I know.
The Premier's proposing to put off a climate bubble.
You don't believe it.
But the world is on fire,
Adam.
Yeah,
I know. I've seen Australia.
And the young people are standing up all across this country to stand up for Indigenous rights, for climate action. And that's what I was doing that day in the noblest traditions of nonviolent civil disobedience. I thought you were there as an observer, Ben. No, I never said that.
You never said you were at the legislature as an observer.
I said I was there to show support for the Indigenous youth and the Wet'suwet'en.
You told me you were an observer. You walked around 16 times. You tweeted, "I was there observing." So now you're there as a supporter.
That's what I told Mary Griffin. You can play her quote. Okay. I said it was. I said I strongly support them. She said, "Why are you here? Or why are you at this protest?" I said, "Because I strongly support it." Was my quote.
Yeah.
And she misquoted it, saying I support it 100%.
Yeah.
And these are the nonviolent civil disobedience is how societies change. It's uncomfortable at times.
Yeah.
It pushes the realms of respectability. But whether we look from Gandhi, whether we look at Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, Nelson Mandela, all of these figures at times have had tensions with authority.
Yep.
It makes us uncomfortable. But what we're seeing in Canada, you're trying to make this about me and do that all you want.
Here's what I'm saying, Ben, is your tweet says, I was there all day observing interactions between the public and legislative officials. You're now telling us there you were supporting them. You were not biased. You were not objective. You were biased. You had a side. But you're an observer when it's convenient, and you're a supporter when it's convenient.
Do you think any of your listeners think I don't have an opinion on the issue of the colonization of Wet'suwet'en land?
I just want to hear you acknowledge it, Ben.
I've acknowledged that I have strong views on this stuff.
Anything else before we go?
I would encourage everyone, all these listeners, to let's get off the radio. Let's head downtown. Support all the young people today who are standing up for what they believe in, who are showing the provincial and federal governments that the permits have to be suspended, that good faith negotiations with the Wet'suwet'en have to proceed, that the militarized option of RCMP has to be withdrawn, and that our country has to move forward to a new future founded in social justice, decolonization, and ecological protection. And anyone who wants to work with me and the grassroots groups on this
car might be justified.
For 1 minute to show that I was not in favor of the colonization of Wet'suwet'en lands.
All right, thank you. There's the admission. Have a great day, Ben.